Commerce called together a meeting of some of the highest people in the world, in this country, manufacturing, bankers, lawyers, educators, over 1,500 men, at what was called a White House conference on business looks at the world of 1990. Now, this is 1972. As a summary of this three-day meeting among these top-level people, at which the president spoke, every cabinet officer spoke, and everybody else, a very highly detailed meeting, Roy Ash, the president of Litton Industries, got up and said, as a summary of what we've been saying, I see that the consensus is that as our country is moving more and more toward a form of socialism, the communist world is moving more and more toward a form such as our way of operation, and that the two countries will come together sometime in the middle of 1990. Now, that gentleman was making that statement in that highly qualified group of people, from the president on down, in 72. 18 years later, what happened? The two countries have come. Now, that's not a guess. He knew what he was talking about, and that's what I mean. These things are done by plan. They are not happenstance. So very important things like that.
Well, if I could comment on that, the reason it was interesting to me, because I have an interview, and one of these nights I'll play it for our listeners, with a man who was the chief investigator for the Reese Committee on the which was a congressional committee that was investigating the Great Foundations back in 1954. And I'll play that for the listeners as they talked. At that time, the head of the Ford Foundation was talking about exactly what you're saying. We are going to move America to the left, and Russia will move to the right, and eventually we can merge. And you can, of course, see that now with a move towards the New World Order. A little scary.
And what it means is, of course, as we, if we think about this carefully, sovereignty does not exist today. And that's not my statement. I get that from a book written by Walter Wriston. The book is called Risk and Other Four-Letter Words, and Walter Wriston was the number one banker in the United States back some 10 or 15 years ago. And he writes in his book that because of the instantaneous communications and finance and transport all over the world, sovereignty no longer exists. Now, this is a most dramatic truth because it affects every one of our lives and changes the way business is done throughout the world, because we are now immersed in the one world order. Whether we know it or not, we're in it.
We sure are. Well, look, let's go to talk to Vernon here on three. Vernon, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank
you.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask the Colonel a question here. I was recently watching C-SPAN, and they had ex-President Gerald Ford on, who was the last surviving member of the Warren Commission. And Larry King asked him about the Kennedy assassination, to which Gerald Ford replied that there was no conspiracy, that the findings of the commission were definitive, and that it was a one-man thing. Would you care to comment on why what Gerald Ford's part is in all this, etc.?
I discussed it briefly earlier because I said that every single president since Kennedy has said the same thing. In other words, will not waver one word from the findings of the Warren Commission report. But think of the reasons. I also said a while ago that Lyndon Johnson thought that some of those bullets had been fired at him. He asked J. Edgar Hoover that. He said, were the bullets aimed at me? That's Lyndon Johnson. Bullets are probably the greatest educators in the world. Then right behind him comes Nixon, who was in Dallas at the moment the president was killed, even though in four different books that I have, he tells different stories of being up LaGuardia or flying up to New York or so on and so on. He was in Dallas. He was not going to, I don't know why he changes his story or why in the Watergate business he has these strange tapes that he won't release where he talks about the Bay of Pigs thing when he means the Kennedy assassination. Nixon understands it. In other words, if you've been shot at and had a near miss, or if a friend of yours has been shot at and been killed, I'll tell you, you've been educated. And this is what causes this. There is no way for these people to say anything else. I mean, we're all human. Let's believe that.
So basically, you know, you're just saying that Ford is just said, I'm more in a position to live. I'd rather live than be shot.
Well, and the other thing is, I'm saying very clearly this, I know Gerald Ford is not dumb, and I know that Jimmy Carter is not dumb, and Ronald Reagan is not dumb, because you would have to be quite ignorant to think that the report of the Warren Commission makes sense if all you did was consider the physical problems.
Right. The thing that struck me about Gerald Ford was he was actually on the commission, is what he'd said. That did the investigation. He says he was the last remaining person that was still alive from that commission,
well,
and having gone through the investigation.
He was very active. He went to more meetings of the Warren Commission than any other member of the commission. He wrote a book about the hearings before the hearings were published, something that they had all agreed not to do, but he did it. In other words, he's very active on this Warren Commission thing, but he's wrong. And, you know, you can't say he's wrong because he's dumb. He's got to be
well, no, I just, yeah, I wanted that perspective thrown in because, you know, here you have a gentleman that's getting older in age, which I might ask you, Colonel, too, is don't you fear for your life?
I always get asked that, but, you know.
You haven't been asked it tonight, though, I didn't think.
I've been through three wars. I've been through two books now, and, my birthday is day after tomorrow, and I'll be 76 years old. So I can't worry about the same thing every day.
Look, Brennan, thank you. Thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Good night. And let's see. Our next caller is Bill from Santa Cruz. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Fine.
I'd like to...
Is this the bill we had before, or is this a new bill?
Yes, it is. No, it's the same old bill.
All right, same old bill.
That's an interesting subject, too, what they're doing with our old bills. Anyway, I wanted to ask the colonel about what he mentioned about Russia or USSR and America becoming one, basically. And I've heard, I've read and heard that the Illuminati in times past were instrumental in financing the revolution in Russia, and it's an experiment that the rest of us will join soon, where religion is outlawed, and it's Nathan Rothschild's plan, the Illuminati, which was the predecessor to the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission of today, and that it's not just an accident that the world, that Russia and America is coming together. It's a long-range plan, and we're soon to be involved in the experiment that Russia has gone through as far as outlawing religion and making the the old Masonic conspiracy work ever again.
Well, no, you're sort of going from Masonic conspiracy to Illuminati to Nathan Rothschild. And
well, they're all the same. They're involved. It was Nathan Rothschild who helped finance that revolution, and it's also the Nathan Rothschild, who is also a benefactor of our monetary debt system. So it's not really that far-fetched. It's all the same people. And the continuity is a group of people who have been together for centuries. I wonder if Mr. Prouty has much more to say about that. I know it's not a safe subject to talk about as well, but I think people need to know.
Well, listen, I hope that you will have an opportunity to read my book, because what you're saying is within the area of fact and truth historically. The thing is that these different names, you know, Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Masonic, on and on and on,
mm-hmm.
those are the groupings that people see within their own realm of experience. But they don't see the things that, for instance, Nehru saw in governing what he tried to do with India, or what Chiang Kai-shek saw when he tried to govern China and found out he had bosses, or what Churchill was trying to do in England when he said he was working with a high cabal, you see?
Exactly. That high cabal is who
elements
the high cabal is who I'm speaking
that
of.
That are not, well, the thing about that is that there very definitely is that type of power. But it is my belief, and again, I'll say this in a singular way, in a very objective, a very subjective way, it is my belief that people like those people on the Trilateral Commission are the lobbyists, you might say, for the real power makers. Because, I mean, we understand lobbyists. If General Electric has lobbyists, we know those lobbyists are running all over Washington talking to congressmen, but they're working for General Motors, for General Electric or for General Motors, et cetera.
Right.
Well,
okay.
The Trilateral people are lobbyists for the people who put them on that commission. Cecil Rhodes, for example, set more of this in motion probably than any other man. I don't know if you noticed it, but when the Ill Winds program came in and they found all this bribery and contract trouble with the Navy about 2 or 3 years ago, the first man that was tried and the first man that was sent to jail in that was the son of the man Cecil Rhodes sent to this country to cause the breakup of the United States. Well, we know those things, you see, but those are only parts of the story. It's a big story, and you're on the right track, and keep going.
Bill?
Keep in mind that I still agree with Buckminster Fuller that the real high-level people remain anonymous, and that's the definition of them. They're beyond reach.
Well, speaking of high-level, could you shed some light on the theory of the Spear of Destiny and who holds that?
I'll tell you what, Bill. We're getting way off the assassination. Why don't you? You ought to read. You ought to read the Colonel's book. There's some very good references in there, and he talks about some of the very powerful bankers in America. Read his book, and then call in again when we're really getting onto that subject rather than the assassination. Okay.
All right.
I know you're interested in it, but you're putting the Colonel on the spot here. He's an expert on the assassination, and that's what we want to talk about tonight.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
And we're going to go to the lovely Carolyn. Is this the lovely Carolyn?
This is the lovely Carolyn. Thank you, Stan, and happy birthday in 2 days, Colonel.
Thank you.
I actually wanted to get a little bit off field, but not really directly, one thing I noticed tonight in all of your talking about the assassination of JFK is you never mentioned partisan politics, which I find is absolutely amazing in the whole almost 2 hours. It was basically just the conspiracy theory without Democrat or Republican mentioned. And you did mention the upstart young president who had his own ideas versus what the good old boy network had in mind. And the question I guess I have for you, which is a little bit of far field from Kennedy himself, is what do you think Clinton's chances of survival are, or is he part of the old good old boy network?
What do I think? What is it?
She's expressing what some people have said. They're concerned about Clinton's health. Many people are very worried about Albert Gore, President Gore, and there are many conservatives are praying for Clinton's health.
Well, you know, I find this is one of the problems with talk shows. You see, I wrote the book, so what I think is all out there somewhere, and a lot of times I can't come back to it, but she started off with something that I really believe in about the partisan politics working its way into this. I happened to be working for the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Gates, at the time Eisenhower left because of his two terms. At the time, Nixon was defeated, and everybody expected Nixon was going to win, and Kennedy won by a very slim margin. And you're exactly right. People in Washington, many of them, and many of them in the business sector, just hated Kennedy, even though he hadn't served the day, simply because he interrupted the 8 years of Eisenhower politics that Nixon had been trained and rehearsed to carry on for 8 more years. They thought this was all in the bag. It would happen. And frankly, that's at the root of the opposition that grew against Kennedy. It began in that narrow defeat of Nixon, and Nixon always thought he was cheated, you know. I think he believes that to this day. Somebody counting the wards in Chicago did him in. But
probably some truth to that, too.
Yeah, your point is so well taken, and I'm sorry that it doesn't come up sooner, although it's basic to what I've put in the book, and I'm sorry I kind of forget to mention it. But it's a darn good point.
Well, I will definitely get a copy through and find out through Stan exactly where off the air to get a copy because I would like to read it. But I really didn't call earlier because I actually seem to call almost every night and I didn't want to hog the lines from a bunch of other people and I was also just enjoying listening. But with that, since there's probably other callers, and even if there's not, you and Stan need to wrap it up. And so again, Stan, I'll thank you for another great educational program, and thank you, Colonel, for being on the air, and happy birthday again.
Well, let me add one little note. It just happened that on the last day that Eisenhower was president, therefore the last day that Mr. Gates was the Secretary of Defense, it was my job to go in and, what we say, brief the Secretary on the Bay of Pigs program. Now, of course, he knew what it was because he'd been the Secretary. So I went in to see him, and it was about, quarter past five, and there was an enormous party going on in his office, and his secretary wouldn't let me go in to where he was, but she sent me in to his deputy, Jim Douglas, Mr. Douglas.
Now, who were you seeing? Who were you seeing?
And
he was seeing the Secretary of State.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so I talked to Mr. Douglas about what I had to tell him about the Bay of Pigs developments for that day, and then at the end, I said, Mr. Douglas, when I come in tomorrow or next week with this similar briefing but an update, can I expect that the men who are following you and Mr. Gates will be briefed on what we've been talking about? And he turned to me, and he had a real beautiful, soft smile. He said, you know, Colonel, he said, I've never met the bastards. I mean, there was no relationship between the outgoing group and the incoming Kennedy group, and they hated each other. I never saw a better and simpler expression of it than when Jim Douglas turned around, and that's the way he told me that, no, they won't know what you're going to tell them. You're going to start all the way back to B.C.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Carolyn.
Well, thank you, and again, happy birthday, Colonel.
Thank you.
Well, Colonel, we've been out for almost 2 hours. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this evening. And I want to thank you for having the courage to write the two books that you put out, The Secret Team and your second book on the assassination of Kennedy. It's entitled The CIA, Vietnam, and the Plot to Assassinate John F. Kennedy. I think you've done society a great service by recording a lot of history that people won't ever read any other place. And perhaps sometime in maybe 6 months or so, we could get together with you again.
Well, it's a pleasure working with you, Stanley. I like the way you do your program, and you've got some loyal followers out there. I know several people in the Monterey Carmel area, and I say good night to them.
Fine. Thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Well, here we are. We just wanted to take a few minutes, the few minutes that we have left before the news comes on, to remind you that this is KFER-FM, and this is Radio Liberty coming to you on 89.9 FM on your radio dial. I wanted to bring you up to date with what we're going to have in the future. Tomorrow evening is a special treat. President Bill Clinton, when he accepted the nomination of the Democratic Party to become the President of the United States, made the statement that two men had molded his attitude, his life. One of them was JFK, and the other was his teacher at Georgetown University, Dr. Carol Quigley. Well, tomorrow evening, you're going to hear for the first time, ever actually, an interview with Carol Quigley that was recorded back in the mid-1970s, never heard before on radio, television, and probably there are not a dozen people in the entire nation have ever heard the interview with Quigley as he talks about his book, his opus book, where he laid out the background of the secret societies. So for those of you who are interested in knowing more about the man who inspired our new president, tomorrow evening here on Radio Liberty. On Monday, we're having Tal Brooks, a man who went to India to worship at the foot of the guru. He decided he was going to find the secret to life, and after a time in India, he eventually came to see the truth, but not the truth put forward by his guru. He came back to America, became a writer. He's traveled across the country talking about many of the things we're talking about tonight. Author of a book called When the World Will Be One, basically the same theme we just heard about from Colonel Prouty, this idea of convergence and the new world order. On Tuesday evening, I'll be away on television. On Wednesday evening, next week, we'll have the former CDC employee who was in charge of monitoring the AIDS epidemic in Florida and what happened to him when he wanted to do a good job. Thursday evening next week is the immigration time bomb, and Friday of next week is John Wilkes libertarian candidate for Congress, former libertarian candidate, just talking about the libertarian philosophy. Now, for those of you who are listeners and regular listeners, we would like to tell you that we depend on your support to keep our program on the air. Believe me, it's expensive to have telephone calls all across the country, and we have lots of exciting people coming on. We have, well, I really won't tell you who they all are. You're going to have to stay listening, but we have the man for whom Rambo was patterned, the Rambo who went into Vietnam looking for prisoners of war. We have discussions coming up on prisoners of war. We'll even have something for Bill on the Masonic movement in the not-too-distant future and explain to you how all of these various movements tie together. Any of you who would like tapes of any of the programs we've put on, they are available for a minimal cost. And if you'd like to call our number here at 646-482-95, you can inquire on the cost. If you would like to find out more about supporting us, you can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063, and we have a regular monthly support program where those who do give monthly support will get at least the first month a copy of Pat Robertson's book, The New World Order, one of the best programs, one of the best books taking you behind the scenes. In fact, it deals extensively with Carol Quigley's book and Carol Quigley's revelations, which become even more important now that his protege is sitting in the White House back in Washington, D.C. For those of you who are regular supporters of our program, there's either a book or a tape or a video available on a regular basis. We hope that some of you will feel it's worthwhile supporting us so that we can keep us on the air, because you're going to hear things here that you're never going to hear any other place. And so I want to thank you. We'll look forward to having you with us tomorrow evening here on Radio Liberty as we begin looking at the story behind the story, the news behind the news. Good night, and God bless you.
There's a cancer called crime in our city and an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Put an end to the gangs and the drugs and the streets. And the fact that the bad guys must always go free, that is wrong. We need leaders who lead us, not sick of and bleed us, and take all our money and spend it.
Anniversary of Roe versus Wade is being marked by an all-night prayer vigil by pro-lifers in the nation's capital. Thousands are expected to later march to the Supreme Court to protest the ruling, which legalized abortion in the United States. On Capitol Hill, Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell says passing the Freedom of Choice bill will not...